You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Each week, my co-host, my fabulous friend, and my co-host, Ellen Little, and I meet here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, and we chat about kitchen table topics and things that are going on around the nation. Anything we could chat about. It's a fun, unscripted, very informative, and quite educational show.
But you've really stuck to a lot of human interest stories and things that have really affected our communities, too. So that's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun.
Well, I think anything that affects a community affects me in some way as well.
Right.
And, of course, having 18 brothers and sisters and over 100 nieces and nephews, somebody is affected by one issue sometime, right?
That's right?
Whether it's a job, whether it's going to college, whether it's a trade, whether it's having a child, not having a child, affordable housing, whatever it is, somebody in our family is going to be hit with that for that day.
That's right.
Right? And so, you know me, I'm always surfing and reaching out to people to come on the show. And we have a very action-packed show today. In studio with us, we have Todd Derritani, I hope I said it correctly.
You did.
And
thank
he calls
you.
Himself a big boy Florida native.
Yep, I'm the big boy, big boy dining out.
He's going to be talking later on our show about food, something near and dear to our heart, and he's going to be talking about why he criticizes, whether it's good or bad.
It's critique.
Yeah, he's a critique. And so he's going to talk about his restaurant criticisms in a little bit.
Critiques,
and then
yeah.
Calling in from Sacramento, California, we have Mr. Bob H-E-R-N-E, Hearn, Bob mm-hmm. Hearn, and he is a MSW, and he's a National Project Director for Adopt U.S. Kids. And Bob has 30 years of experience in the field of human services. Before joining Adopt U.S. Kids, he most recently served as the CEO of Sierra Forever Families in Sacramento, California. I like saying Sacramento because that always reminds me of John Wayne. I don't know why, but it had to be because I read all these Louis L'Amour books with my brother when I was a kid, and everything was about Sacramento and Laramie and all these places. But before we go to Bob Hearn on the phone, he's already online. Thank you, Bob, for calling in. We just wanted to say, you know, our hearts and our prayers goes out to all the families who lost loved ones in that Ethiopian crash. I mean, we all woke up to that Sunday morning. I'm not sure how much it was, over 147.
There was a lot of tragedy the last week. We had the tornadoes that went through that left a lot of families devastated. We had the Ethiopian peace. There's a lot of things going on around the nation.
Yeah, and it makes you question if you really want to fly. I mean, I'm scared to death of flying. And then when you see stuff like that, I was at the gym walking, and of course, one of my friends, her husband, is one of these air marshals on the planes. And she said, yeah. Every time he leaves, I have to, you know, say my prayer because he goes to the Middle East a lot as well. So, you know, so I just want to say, whatever it is, we always say here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that every day you wake up is a good day. Every day you wake up is a day that you could give back to society in some form, whether it's your time, whether it's your an effort for something, volunteer, help a child to read, whatever it is, we have to do something. Because we're all on this earth together on this wonderful earthly vacation.
That's what we're put here for, to make a dent.
Yeah, I like my earthly vacation. I love it. So Bob Hearn is on the phone. And Bob, you're with a really good group called Adopt U.S. Kids. So welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And thanks for waking up early in California and calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a beautiful day.
Oh, my goodness. And thank you for sending us, for corresponding and sending those questions as well, because I had them and I must have lost them. Technology, you know how that goes. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
About me, about my history?
Yeah, just a quick bio. Well, we read a little bio, but if you'd like to add anything to that and, you know, just let us know, you know, tell us how you got started with U.S. Kids, with adopt U.S. kids.
Sure. So I've been a social worker for over 30 years, working in child welfare and developmental disabilities around my passion that everyone has to have at least one person who is unconditionally committed to them, provides them love, safety, and unconditional commitment. And so throughout my years, I've worked for various organizations around that cause. And for 15 years, I ran a permanency agency in Northern California, helping older youth find adoption and families who could provide that unconditional commitment to them. And then I was lucky enough to take my passion nationally and become the National Project Director for Adopt U.S. Kids. And then I guess an interesting thing about me is I speak Quebecois French, so that's probably something unique.
Oh, that is unique. And I love the mission of Adopt U.S. Kids, you know, to raise public awareness about the need for foster and adoptive families for children in the public child welfare system. Because I think we just saw a movie recently about adopting children. And I learned a lot from that movie because they were, you know, people, they were showing us how you have to have a class for it. And financial stability, and to check the mental health of the parents. And I was saying to myself, they should do all of that for people when they become pregnant. You know, make sure that they have a house, and make sure they have a job, and make sure they can raise a kid. So what you guys are doing is really awesome. And I'm grateful that you took the time to call in on our show. So tell us, can you tell us a little bit more about Adopt-A-Kids? Like, what families can adopt? Do you have to be? Can you adopt a child if you're single? How do people get referrals and stuff like that?
Sure. So currently, so Adopt U.S. Kids, I need to say, is a cooperative agreement with the Children's Bureau of the Department of Health and Human Services with the U.S. government. And Adopt U.S. Kids is actually a collaboration of partners across the country whose mission is to raise public awareness about the need for foster adoptive family for children and youth growing up in our public child welfare system, as well as assisting those states, territories, and tribes in recruiting, engaging, developing, and supporting foster adoptive families. So Adopt U.S. Kids assists families throughout the process. So we have a website called adoptuskids.org. Over a quarter of a million people every month visit the website. And the website, it's a great way to learn more about who are the children and youth who are living in foster care and their reasons for needing permanency and how families can come together to help those children. We also have foster care adoption specialists on phone call, so anytime anyone has a question, they can dial in. I can give you that phone number if you would like.
Usually at the end of the show, Ellen, we'll ask you for those resources.
Sure. So there's over 440,000 children and youth who are currently living in foster care in the United States today. And of those, over 123,000 need an adoptive family. So our tagline is, you don't need to be perfect to be a perfect parent, because most people say, oh, I'd like to help a child, but I don't think our family is good enough. And believe me, most of you, your families are good enough. You don't need to be married. You can be single. You don't need to own your own home. You do need to be able to meet your own financial needs. We actually give you an ongoing adoption stipend until that child turns between 18 and 21 years of age, as well as free medical care if you adopt a child from foster care. There's support for after you adopt a child. It really doesn't cost any money to adopt a child from foster care. You might have to pay for some foster prints, but those you get reimbursed once
you
adopt
a question,
sir? Child. Sure.
Where does the stipend come from? Is it the all nonprofit, or is it the government pays it?
Yeah, it's the government that pays it.
Cool. So are you in all 50 states?
Yes. Yeah, cool. So there is, it looks differently in the different state you're in, but every state offers an adoption assistance for families who adopt children out of the foster care system.
Right, and so
part of that is,
and so do you charge for your services?
Well, Adopt US Kids is not an adoption agency. We're here to promote adoption and to assist families through the adoption process, as well as to assist professionals in best practices. What we do is we assist families in getting situated with a local resource, either a public agency or a nonprofit agency, who's licensed to provide adoption from foster care in that particular state.
How exciting. And so, and how long does it usually take to become licensed to adopt? Because I know people, prospective parents have to go through like a class, and then you have to prepare your home. And I mean, the child
right.
really just need loving, a loving parent or loving parents and a great foundation for life. And it's great that you all are able to facilitate that. But how long does it take to adopt?
So it's actually not a quick process, because it's an important process. You're bringing a child into your home and making them a part of your family. So there are classes that you need to take that range in anywhere from 12 to 24 hours, depending on what state you're in. And then there is a home study that all families have to go through, so we can assess what is the best type of need that you can meet for a child. And then there's some regulations in terms of getting your home prepared for it. And then you have to go through the match process in order to find the right match. And that can take anywhere from 3 months to a year. And a lot of that is dependent on the family. So the family, as they're going through this process, it raises a lot of questions with them. And so we try to go at the same rate that the family is ready to proceed.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you another question. How does this differ from going directly through the state and letting the child services adopt directly? Is there a better benefit to using you versus going direct?
Well, we work in partnership with our states. So we don't license families. We assist families through the process. So we would be assisting the family to connect with their local state or county or nonprofit.
So you partner up with
them to do it,
which is great.
Yeah, so we're the U.S. government's federal response to assist states, territories, and tribes in increasing the number of children being adopted across the country. So,
and how many children, Bob, questions. Did you say is waiting to be adopted in the United States right now?
Over 123,000 children currently living in the foster care system need an adoptive family.
And I know you guys do a lot of, you being a social worker, I'm sure you've seen a lot and you hear a lot. And our heart breaks for children every time we see children who are abused or neglected, whether it's by a parent or an entertainer or a priest or whatever it is. I know my heart breaks, right? But why do you think so many children are in foster care? Where is that message that we're supposed to be spreading as human beings about the responsibility of having children? Do you all see a lack of education? I mean, what's causing children? I mean, it could be people don't have a job, they can't raise their kids. What is causing so many, over 100,000 children, to be waiting to be adopted?
Sure. So the overwhelming majority of children who are living in foster care are because their parents were unable to meet their safety needs. And the overwhelming reason for the majority of children being in foster care is due to substance abuse and mental health issues. And so when a child first comes into care, our first goal is to work with that family and provide them the supports and help them to get that child back to live with their biological family. But if that doesn't work, if that doesn't succeed, then it's our responsibility to ensure that a child gets to live with that unconditional love, safety, and commitment of a family. And foster care was always created to be a temporary situation. And the outcomes for children who age out of foster care, who don't find that permanency, are the worst subset of outcomes for any set of youth. So within 4 years of aging out, over 50% still have not completed high school. Over 65% of young girls have had a baby or been pregnant, and within 4 years of aging out of foster care, over 50% of those youth are homeless, in prison, or dead. And so we know, as raising our own children and being in our own families, the absolute critical importance of children having that stability of a family in their life to help them through both the joys and the challenges that life brings.
Man, we really are a village when it comes to human beings. We really are. So I would just want our listeners to know we're speaking with Mr. Bob Hearn, MSW. He's a National Project Director for Adopt U.S. Kids. That's United States Kids. I love that. Anytime we do something great for a nation, I love it. So I see a lot of older kids in photo listings, like the ones on Adopt U.S. Kids. Why would a person want to adopt an older child?
So, for one, children never stop needing the value of family. And so, I just gave you the statistics of what happens to youth who age out of the foster care system. So, our youth, due to no fault of their own, find themselves in a situation where they don't have a permanent family to live with. And so having that stability to help them through high school, all these firsts that you get to do with this child, right? You get to the first time they go on a date, the first time they drive a car, or graduating from high school all the way to walking your son or daughter down the aisle for their wedding. And a lot of times people just don't think about that. Teens want and need a family, but they desperately do. And in the foster care system in the United States, they are disproportionately represented. So most people that come forward that want to adopt come forward because they're unable to have their own biological children, and they're hoping to adopt a baby. But there are thousands of older teens who really desperately could use your help and be an important part of your family. And if you're someone like me, the baby years weren't the most incredible years.
Yeah.
So I think part of it is, when you look at your own lifestyle, you might say, baby doesn't really fit our lifestyle, but an older child would.
Oh, I know. I think the movie that we saw is called Instant Family, I think. And they touched on the older sibling. So so we all know you have to have certain qualities in order to be a foster parent. What are some of the important qualities for a foster parent or an adoptive parent to possess?
Sure. So I think always have humor. I think anytime you're raising children, a sense of humor really helps. And then also a sense of commitment that we're taking this child and we are claiming this child to be our own. And then an ability to have empathy, to understand the trauma that this child has gone through and the loss that they have experienced, and an ability to support that child through that process, and help them to show them the joys and wonder of how incredible the world can be.
Right. And how frequently are children in the foster care system reunited with their birth parents?
So the overwhelming majority of children who enter foster care are back with their biological families within the first year. But there's a small subset of children who unfortunately are unable to go home, about 20%. And so for those children, we desperately need to find families who can open up their hearts and homes and welcome these children as their own.
Is it, Bob, let me ask you this. Is it an automatic bar to adopting if you have criminal convictions of any kind?
No. So really it depends on a couple of things. It depends on what the conviction is, and it depends how long ago it happened. So there's an understanding that we all go through different phases in our life.
Because I think there's a lot of people out there that want to adopt, but I think they can't adopt because, you know, they've had, you know, 20 years ago they had, you know, a felony conviction, maybe had their civil rights restored and feel that they can't. Are you saying that they can, in fact, you know, adopt if they've had, say, their civil rights restored and they have a nice, and they have a home and everything?
They probably need to check with their state, too. Probably has state laws, different laws.
There is. So we always request for families not to allow that to stop them, but to come forward. There is a fingerprint check. An agency will help you to understand about whether that would be okay or whether that would prevent you from adopting. It also, and those are effective also state to state. But sometimes we've all done things when we were younger and stupid that we regret, and many times that does not
interfere.
That does not prevent you from adopting from the foster care system. So I wouldn't allow that to stop a person from moving forward. You know, contact your state, contact us. We can put you in touch with the right people so that you can know for sure whether that would be a detriment or not.
Right. And there's always some degree of openness with adoption and with children who have been adopted. Do you all recommend that the children maintain contact with their birth parents, or is that up to the child?
It's up to the child, and it's up to you as the adopted parents. And so part of what most of these families, biological families who lose these children, love their children and recognize that they can't provide a safe and loving environment for them. And so we always work with the families to determine whether it's safe and in the child's best interest to have ongoing communication with their biological family.
Oh my goodness, all this information to digest. But Bob, Mr. Hearn, I don't have to say Bob. You sound so friendly.
You can call me Bob.
Yeah, you're so friendly that I feel like you're sitting right here in the studio with us. But, you know, in the old days, before all such political turmoil in our world and the us versus them and, you know, all the technology and all this, it used to be that people looked out for each other's kids. We didn't hear so much about abuse and trafficking and all neglect and all that. I'm sure it was happening, but it looks to me anyways that if you saw a child who was in danger, you could say something to that parent without any retribution. Or if you went to school, you could say something to the teacher, the principal. I don't know what has happened to us where we've gotten to this point in our world where we're not as united as we should be. When we say, be thy brother's keeper, I don't think a lot of people really are. So how do we change that? How do we get people to become more compassionate, more loving? And yeah, you might pay a little taxes to help raise a child that's already in this world, but you're going to get it back tenfold.
I guess I see both the worst and the best in the world. So I see horrific things that happen to children, and that's really hard to sometimes wrap my head around. But I also see these amazing families that come forward every year, year after year, and just open up their homes and say, these are our children and we take them in. And I think sometimes we hear all the negativity that's happening in the world and not as much as who these amazing families are that come forward. Just typical American families from every background, every faith, every viewpoint, and just say, I'm going to raise these children as if they're mine and they are part of my family and I love them. And I think we need to get that message out more. There's these amazing videos we produce every year of families that take in children over the age of 15 and say, you're part of our family now. And the impact that it's had both on them as a family as well as the youth who becomes part of their family is amazing. And I think we need to do more of getting that message out. I think we need more movies like Instant Family that shows that I don't want to call our family superheroes, because really everyone doesn't think they're good enough to do this, and they really are. It's the things that's happened in your life that allows you to have empathy for others and to help others through some of the things maybe that you've also been through. And so
I think Instant Family helped a lot of people. I mean, I've spoken with, when I told a couple of people I was doing this morning at the gym, one lady was saying, well, you know, there's a lot about the home study where they actually give you classes and videos and materials mm-hmm. to learn. And we were talking about that, and she didn't know that happened unless she had seen the movie. Because, like you say, right. In the real world, people are so busy with their own lives that they just don't think that they can do it. But I think you guys make it easy through your website with the videos and the homesteading and the material you have there, that if somebody wanted to adopt a child, they can. And I'm grateful that you called in on a show so we could spread this message as well.
Well, I certainly hope your listeners become interested enough to visit our website. We also have the national photo listing that shows who are some of the children and youth who are looking for an adoptive family. We have specialists available to answer any questions and really to assist families through the process. And I think it's wonderful. I'm so appreciative that you're taking the time to highlight the needs of our children.
Yeah, and one more thing. When a child is adopted, do they have to take the name of the adoptive parents so they can keep their own name? How does that work?
So when a child is adopted out of foster care, the family actually gets a new birth certificate listing them as the parents of that child. And then it's a decision between the child and the family about what name that child wants to have.
Man, I would love to be in. I would love to be in a room when the families get together and a child is adopted and everybody is hip hip hooraying, because we saw that in Instant Family, and all of us in the theater, we all clapped when all the characters went up and behind the judge to take that picture when the child got adopted. I felt like I was there as well, and I would think for someone like you, it would be so rewarding to see that. But give us the website and the phone number one more time so that listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and friends would
have it. We've
already
posted most of the information that you've provided, Bob, so we're so excited to be able to share this with our listeners.
That's great. And it is adoptuskids.org, and the phone number 1-888-200-4005, and we also have services in Spanish.
You know, Bob, the world needs more people like you, and we really do.
No, it needs more people like all of us.
Yeah,
right?
But you know, the way you explain it, you're so calm. You're so calm and collected, and you explain it so well that more people need to be just like you so we could understand. We already have these children, and they're already here on Earth, and it is our responsibility to ensure that they have opportunity and a good life and a great foundation, and that can only come from people who are willing to step up to the plate and say, here I am, I can help.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you letting me speak about my passion.
Well, and we have loved having you on the show, Bob, and we have posted everything on Sita Media on our Facebook page, so please check that out and like the page while you're there, and we'll make sure that we keep this promotion going. But as it is right now, we're just going to take a quick break here before we get to Todd Derritany and Big Boys Dining Out. We're going to take a quick break to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores, and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Each week, we're right here in the studio every Monday from 1 to 2. Ellen and I do our thing right here, and our shows can also be heard on the web. And my good friend Ellen and my co-host, she also puts up a blog on Sita Media Inc. Mm-hmm. And I think we're doing good with that.
We're doing great.
Yeah.
Doing great.
It's
still getting
it's a lot of work, but we
1,800 to 2,500 people a week are downloading the podcast from somewhere, different spots.
Yeah.
And certainly iTunes is sporadic sometimes, but it does catch up.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about adoption with Mr. Bob Hearn, who called in from the National Project Director for Adopt U.S. Kids. And I was just saying to Ellen, there was a time when my son said to me, he wanted to be adopted by an Italian family so he can get spaghetti and meatballs. Because, you know, we didn't eat a lot of beef.
Right.
And the kid just,
or spaghetti,
swear,
I'm sure.
The kid just, he didn't like Indian food, but he certainly liked these Italian food, spaghetti and meatballs and shells and things like that. I like them myself.
Yeah.
So I probably want to be adopted.
You just don't cook it at home. It would just have curry in it.
Yeah. So our second segment is with Todd Deratani, and Todd he calls himself the Big Boy. He's a Florida native, and during his 52 years on our planet, on his earthly journey, he's experienced various tastes for cuisines, and in almost every state in the USA, as well as Mexico and Canada. So we're very lucky he didn't go to Trinidad as yet, because he'll eat everything he can find there. The Big Boy is a former attorney and a small businessman. You cut your teeth early in the restaurant industry and has always been fascinated by the art of dining. So welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me today.
We're so
I greatly appreciate it. This is wonderful. We get to get the word out about Big Boy Dining Out.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing is, I think all of us, you and Ellen and I, we're at a stage in our life where we just want to give back and have fun. I mean, we've been there, done that. Whatever is in the past is in the past. I say to people, I'm a nurse, I'm an author, I do public speaking. We have this radio show here. Ran for office, did my own skincare line, and now I'm just kind of relaxed.
Right.
It's kind of like you could check things off, right?
Absolutely.
So that's, to me, it looks to me like that's what you're doing. You just found your passion and you're doing it.
I fell into it completely by accident. I retired in October of 2017 after I sold my business. and I was eating out at a restaurant, and I was interested in the poor quality of the food, and it was frustrating to me. And so I posted a review, a very cursory review, on Facebook, and I started getting a massive response from people saying, you should write more reviews, you should go check out restaurants. And so I didn't go at it wholeheartedly in the beginning, but I did as time went on, and then it just grew. I started a Big Boy Dining Out Facebook page, and we started with one like, and now we have almost 14,000 likes on our Facebook page a year later. And I have on our other social media platforms, we're now appealing to almost 86,000 followers of Big Boy Dining Out. And I think what makes me different is that I give what's known as the unfettered review, which means I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to tell the truth. And if you're a great restaurant serving great food, then I'm going to really, I'm going to back you 100%. But if you're one of those restaurants that wants to cut corners to make a buck, I'm not mad at you, but I'm going to explain what you're doing wrong so people can get to the best food in Brevard County and in Indian River County.
Right. And I would think having a law degree helps, because you're able to use your communication skills properly to write these criticisms down.
Well, writing is a big part of, being a lawyer. And, I haven't been a lawyer in 9 years, but I still enjoy the communication aspect of that. But then I was also in the car business too, so
you like people, Todd.
I like to talk to people. That's for sure.
Yeah. So do you ever have restaurant owners that are upset with you?
Absolutely.
And how does that?
What usually happens is, to talk about the positive people, the positive restaurants, I have a strong group, a support group. It's not just me. I have three executive chefs that look at my reviews before they're published, look at the food pictures to make sure that I'm correct and haven't made a mistake. I have an editor in Los Angeles and an editor in Washington, D.C. to make sure that the reviews are technically correct. And, I'm trying to make this a real deal. We have advertisers, on the website. But to answer your question, the people that get the positive reviews, of course, are strongly supportive. The people that get the 2- and 1-star reviews are people that really, they're not in the business to deliver culinary excellence. They're in the business to make a dollar, make their money on the tourists. And yes, I have had experiences where one local cook called me and threatened to kill me. And then I had one run out in the parking lot after me as I was trying to get my kids into the car. So those are extreme.
Right.
Most of the time it's just emails or phone calls.
But, I was reading on the web that food criticism can be an excellent career. People make a living off of this. And some of them have to take culinary classes to familiarize themselves with the words to use and the kind of foods, the presentation. Did you have to do any of that?
I didn't go to culinary school. What I did was I've read a lot of books about after I started doing this, not before. I had worked in the restaurant industry when I was younger for a couple of years, so I had a little bit of knowledge, but then it came down to talking to industry vendors to figure out why I was seeing the same breakfast steak at the Holiday Inn that was at the same breakfast steak that was at an Italian restaurant being served as filet mignon, and then the exact same breakfast steak being served, at another restaurant for a lunch thing. And so what I got acquainted with are the vendor's products. So I now know, and it took me a good 6-8 months to realize it, but I know now as soon as I see the plate of food served to me, whether they're using quality ingredients or not.
I was just going to say, what is the difference with quality versus quantity, right?
Right. Well, that's a great question. It doesn't – your food – you don't have to have copious amounts of food, on your plate. And, of course, everybody has, different tastes in food because, there's obviously places like Subway and, Jersey Mike's and, these chain restaurants. They're popular for a reason because people – they don't – a minority of people don't understand the, this new American food movement that's going on, and using, and now in Brevard County, getting cuisine from foreign countries that's now popping up. I'm a native of Brevard County, and when I was younger, there was one Mexican restaurant, and that was the extent of the, you know, of the culinary. Everything else was just,
as far as cultural,
yeah,
food.
Yeah, cultural food.
That was it.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we
and the one Greek diner, which was what, Chef's Garden,
that's
down
right.
at the end of, right?
That's
so that
right.
was like the only Greek family in town,
yeah.
that was actually
it was
serving.
Really, so it's really exciting to see. And there's some people, I can tell you, you know, there's a gentleman that owns Restaurant Cuisine in Satellite Beach that's my top-rated restaurant in Brevard County at the present time. And Chef Zorin changes his menu. He has different specials every single day, and he changes his menu every few months, and it's always dynamically prepared, executed, and they also have the best service. But then people say to me, you know, I can't afford, you know, to spend $100 to go out. But you know what? You don't have to, because there's restaurants that serve, you know, high-end food for, you know, for less money.
Well, and it depends if you get drinks, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, sometimes you could eat for less and just have water, right?
I mean, for example, Ocean 302 down in Melbourne Beach has they serve these gourmet burgers and pizzas, and the burgers are ground steak, not ground beef.
Yes.
Although beef is steak, but, you know, they're ground prime cuts of steak, and they put them into their burgers, and all their pizzas are all original. So it's that type of stuff that you can go in there and you can eat for under $30 and get high quality food.
Yeah. And did you ever have to go back into a restaurant and reevaluate something that you evaluated, and then the people call you back and say, we'd like you to share this experience one more time?
I do, but I have to do, everything I do is anonymous. And so they don't know that I'm, you know, when I'm coming in. And so I have had restaurants like change ownership and ask me, you know, well, would you give us another chance, you know, maybe you could come in on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I always explain to them, well, if I'm going to come back in, you know, it's going to be anonymously. And I'm going to tell you, there were some places that had some real issues. Beachside Seafood went from, you know, I gave them a 1-star rating, and now they're up to 4 stars because the guy that owns that place
he probably appreciated it.
He did, and he turned the whole place around. And then the Apollo Diner, which has been there for
ever.
Yeah, it's been there for 20 years. The owners finally sold it. The people that had it finally sold it. And now these new people have come in and they've reworked the menu. They've upgraded their ingredients, you know, and you know, the prices are still the same. They're just not cutting corners anymore.
Well, I'm glad you're doing that. You do that, because, you know, we always talk about, you know, some of the most important things in life is family, friends, food, faith, and forgiveness, right?
Absolutely.
And food always comes in there.
Always.
But I find that one of the ways you can judge a restaurant as well is how you're greeted and how you're seated. Do you find that to be something that, like customer service, if
yes.
they greet you with a smile, do you have a nice waiting area for people, you know, things like that?
I understand exactly what you're saying, Sita. And one of the things, though, about Big Boy Dining Out is that I rate solely on the food. Because I have a saying that good service isn't going to make bad food good. But good food will be good whether your service is, you know, bad or not.
So you want, you're evaluating what's on the plate.
I mean, I mention all the other things, but what's on the plate is what matters, and that's what I've gotten my biggest response from.
Do you go by a presentation as well, or just?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a list. I have a set of guidelines. It's actually the guidelines from the National Food Critics and Journalists website that I'm a member of, and, you know, I try to follow their guidelines, but I've reworked them to fit in to my niche, which is, you know, focus on the food.
And actually, if you look at the pictures, I mean, if you go on to Todd's blog,
I know,
and
I
you
saw
look at
it.
All the pictures, there's no questioning. I mean, you see what the presentation is, because it seems like you're taking a picture like as soon as it hits the table.
Yes.
Or within seconds of it hitting the table. And you can tell when it's just not, when it's served on paper.
Yeah.
You know, and not.
So bad service doesn't influence how he thinks about the food.
Right. I've had fantastic service at some restaurants that were actually
And the food
abominable.
Is horrible. Yeah. So when you go out, so I'm just thinking, like, so if you go out, do you go out in a group or do you go by yourself? I mean, do they know? Because most people probably know you by now.
No, I mean,
they still don't.
People generally do, but I try to be inconspicuous. Like, I'll take my daughter with me. I'll take a date with me. I usually try to go with someone else so it doesn't look like I'm this lone fat guy sitting in a restaurant taking pictures of food, and then that usually tips them off. I had about a month ago, I had a restaurateur up in Titusville that his review hasn't come out yet, but the food was really good. He came running out into the parking lot and said, "You're the big boy, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." He said, "How was the food?" I said, "Yeah, it was great. You're going to get a decent review." And then, you know, I scurry away because I'm really...
So I always judge like a restaurant by the boisterous attitude in the restaurant too, right? If people are in a restaurant and they're laughing and talking and giggling and having a great time, to me that's a hint that something good is going on.
Absolutely.
But have you found though, like maybe people are there for a big party, but the food still is not good? And at that point, is it just a time together? Or?
No. It's very consistent when I see restaurants where the patrons are happy. Most of the time, the food is good. There are some... I went to a place, though, in Sebastian, it was called the Hen House, I did a review on, and the people were actually started talking to me, not the other patrons were just talking to me, not the restaurant staff. And, you know, it was a really good experience from the food standpoint. The food was actually good. But because, you know, I take pictures, I go to leave, and this woman runs out and starts snapping pictures of me. And I said, "Well, would you want to get a selfie together?" I thought she knew who I was. And she goes, "Now, how does it make you feel having your picture taken?" And I was like,
"Well, you know, young people put their food on Instagram."
That's what I do.
Most
exactly.
People, but you know what? A lot of us take our pictures of our food and put it on Instagram.
Right.
How many people? I do that all the time. Sure. You know, you're just because you
especially
find
when it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you're having a good experience, for sure.
Right. So when you go to a restaurant, though, I guess you don't judge the service from the wait staff, because some restaurants you go to, they might give you a good plate of food and it's delicious, but the staff is just pulling plates away and the waiters are just waiting for you to get done so they could take. And I think that anxiety adds to... what's going to happen with that food when you eat it?
I get you. You know, and a lot of people are like that, and they get... Everybody's not like me. So, you know, I don't let stuff like that bother me. The stuff that does bother me are people that, you know, servers that ignore you, you know, don't come over, that are playing, you know, they're laughing and joking around.
And not including the guests.
Yeah, and they're not paying attention to the guests, and you know that type of stuff. And you know, sometimes restaurants like that, the food's good because the owner of the restaurant is so focused on his food that he didn't pay any attention to the front of the house, right. And so they don't have anybody managing the front of the house. And so you read a lot of reviews on like Yelp or Google, and they'll tell you, "Oh, the service was terrible," and they give the person one star, but the food was good.
Yeah. So how long does it take you?
And
to,
that's such a good dynamic to switch to that,
right?
Yeah.
For you, because it really is all about. And you can. And I just want to encourage the listeners. If you're listening, it's bigboydining.com is the website. Yeah. It's called Big Boy Dining Out, but you can actually go on and search. So if you're going to a favorite restaurant and you'd like to see what Todd's opinion of his experience was, you can certainly just hit that search button right at the top, put in your favorite restaurant, and you can actually see the pictures of what comes out, or the way that it comes out. And just like you said, I'm much more about the food because you spend a lot of time worrying about the food.
And what about the menu? Do you pay attention to the menu?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, sometimes you see something on the menu, but it's not what's on your plate.
Oh, I see that a lot, actually.
Right. And then you have to communicate that to us. How would you communicate something like that to us?
Well, usually I tell people that they need to look at the pictures. I find it, sadly enough, that happens most often in Italian restaurants. And I don't know why Italian restaurants seem to predominate in low-quality food in this area, but there are some really good Italian restaurants that care a great deal about what they're serving. But
So the description doesn't match the plate.
The description doesn't match the plate.
Right.
Most often in Italian restaurants. Right. If you get in the new American genre of foods or gastro pubs, yeah, the...
I wonder why that happens, because most restaurants have a public relations person or marketing person or somebody that does their menus that would actually sit down with the chef.
Well, not necessarily for locals, and Todd doesn't do chains. He doesn't do national chains, so he's just dealing with local restaurants, so it's usually one or two locations, correct?
So how many do you do a week? How many restaurants a week?
We release three reviews a week. Wednesday, every 3 days, it's at 6:30. Wednesdays is an out-of-area review, which will be either Indian River, Osceola, Orange, or...
Orlando.
Well, Orlando's Orange County.
Yeah.
Or Daytona, which is Volusia County. We'll do that. We'll release one of those on a Wednesday. And then Saturday is the day where the restaurants that didn't do so well...
That's when you get your phone calls.
Saturdays are when we get the phone calls. And then Sunday is the restaurant that we recommend. You need to go and try it, because it's like yesterday, 4th Street Filling Station review went up. They're a new restaurant in Cocoa Beach, a new American with a twist of Southwestern, but it's not Tex-Mex. It's just Southwestern flavors, like, you know, how Bobby Flay started to, you know, do in the... you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s. And that it was just, for a place that had just only been open a month, you know, there was no, you know, there's no excuses. I mean, there shouldn't have been, I mean, it was, everything was good. Nobody had to make any excuses. But then you go to other restaurants and the food's bad, and they're like, well, we just opened up. Give us six months. But, well, if 4th Street Filling Station can serve excellent food 1 month in, there's no reason anybody can't.
So do you ever find yourself reevaluating the wine list that goes along with the food, or you stay away from the wine list?
No, I look at craft cocktails when restaurants have them. That's a new movement. You know, every restaurant now has to have, you know, some fancy, you know, craft cocktail that's been, you know, reworked, or maybe from the 1920s or 30s and brought up to modern day. And I do know about wine. I actually was a lobbyist for the wine industry back in 2002 through 2005. And so I got to know all the California wineries, and I met a lot of the owners of the places. And it was, you know, it was fascinating. But now it's like, it's just like with beer.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has to brew their own beer. And I have to tell you, most of it's not good. But it's, you know, but people brew their beer. And, you know, now everybody's opening up a wine shop and have, you know, creating, you know, boutique wineries. And it's not like it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago when, you know, there were some major players, not volume-wise, taste-wise.
Right.
So we just... getting to the breweries as well?
I've been to just about all of them.
Because now there's some local ones now that are supplying some of the restaurants, too, that are here local.
Yeah, the funny part is the one that's the most popular doesn't serve the food themselves. They have a food truck there.
So you stick to what you're good at.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Todd, the big boy, a Florida native, Todd Derritani, and we're talking about his new passion, which is to criticize restaurants and
critique. Because it's not always criticize. It's critique the food.
Critique. Yeah.
The bulk of them are positive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I always thought when somebody critiqued the food that they also checked the kitchen, the staff, and you were saying that this is not applicable in this case. It's more like the food.
Well, I think in general, people are normally, when you're going out and you got Yelp and TripAdvisor and some of those places, I think normally, to what Todd had said before, that people are critiquing how long did they have to wait.
Yes.
And they're not really talking about that they got great food. They're saying that the waitress wasn't nice or this didn't happen for them. Somebody's having a crabby day. Correct.
Rude.
So I think a lot of that happens. So the fact that Todd is focusing primarily on the food
plate
is different.
Yes,
it's
I like that.
And it's professional.
Right.
Because it's uncompromising. You know,
that's the other thing that, you know, the local businesses and papers, they're restricted in what they can do in their reviews. You know, whether it's the local circulars or whether it's the local newspaper, even in Orlando and, you know, in the bigger cities, they're restricted on because they are attracting advertising. They want these restaurants to advertise. BigBoyDiningOut.com does not accept any advertising dollars from restaurants at all. All of our advertisers are
from your former
they're from
industry.
The car, I
Harlow,
in the car
I've
business.
Got car
I
but have, isn't that nice that you were lawyers? Able to transfer, you know, your business from the big boy cars and everything else into this business to where people actually trust what you're saying?
I know it's.
I mean, it's wonderful. But here's the thing: how long does it take you to sit down there and eat a meal that you know you're going to write something about?
I usually can get it all done in about 30 minutes between, because I'm usually typing. Like, I actually stopped at a place in Cocoa Village today that I've been meaning to get to while I was waiting to come here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a really nice restaurant, had some service issues, but the food was good.
And what about food trucks? Do you ever find yourself?
I do.
You do.
I do. I get food trucks. I'll eat just about any. One of the best meals I've had was at a flea market in Kissimmee.
I was just going to say that. The one on 192.
Yes, yeah.
I forget.
Kebab de Istanbul.
Yeah.
He still has to eat in my kitchen.
Well, that's true.
One day I would have to.
I'll come over anytime.
But so do you have a favorite? Because, like, I'm Indian. My husband's Persian. My children are American. My friends is Greek. I have Jewish friends. Mm-hmm. I have Muslim friends. I have all kinds. And I have to say the one staple that I see in everybody's diet is different kinds of rice.
Right.
Everybody could do something with rice.
Right.
So do you have like a favorite kind of food that you like?
Well, I actually, and I'm not just trying to suck up, I actually like Indian food.
Chicken tikka masala. No, because there's something about Indian food that it's not just food. It fills a void. It's an emotional connection to curry chicken, I'm telling you.
I would agree with you, Sita. Indian food is that and Greek food are my two top.
Yeah, I mean, favorites. It comes with so much love, I think. The spices, it just makes you feel so good about it.
And the service is always good in Indian. I've never had bad service in an Indian restaurant ever.
I think that food is the one way that we could connect to human beings. And I think even politically, if we can have like a big breakfast once a week, a big lunch,
break bread,
whatever it is in Tallahassee or Washington, D.C., if we can break bread together and eat and have such a great emotional experience, I think the world
and
will be
good. And we'll invite bigboydining.com to come check it out and make sure that we have great
anytime,
experience.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Todd. And thank you to our first call-in guest, Bob Hearn, for calling in about Adopt U.S. Kids. Please visit our CETA Media site, CETAMediaInc.com, and also our Facebook page to get all the updates of all the new shows. And we'll see you next week right here live on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends.
You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.